Hello, everyone, and welcome to Real Blend, a podcast that loves Porgs, Whole Foods, and the musical stylings of Mark McGrath, and all of that will make sense in a second. My name is Sean O'Connell, the managing director here at Cinema Blend, and this is an action-packed all-star edition of our weekly podcast. Before we get to our special guest, we have to say hello to Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Jake, how are you, sir?
You act like it's a dude, like we have to say hi to Jake, like it's in his contract. We have to say hello to him.
I also have to choose like which one I introduce first. I try and rotate it, but every once in a while I lose track of who got to go first.
I'm keeping track. I'm up by four.
Yes. I've actually been told the opposite, Sean. I've been told that you send texts to Gabe and Jake without me, and Jake complains if he's not introduced first that he will no longer do our podcast.
This is true.
These are things that we need to tell our audience.
I often remind Sean, I am two-time Best Hair Award winner Jake Hamilton.
This is true.
And I will be treated with respect.
That other voice is Kevin McCarthy, Fox 5 entertainment reporter in Washington, D.C., who we can now welcome to the Best Friends with Tom Cruise fan club.
Yeah, Best Friends with Tom Cruise fan club.
Yeah, he actually gave me the card. He handed me the card after my interview was over. It said Best Friends with Tom Cruise, and it had all the different locations on the back and who were his other friends. But I do want to say the introduction you just gave. So every week Sean does a very funny introduction as he introduces our show.
Borderline and funny.
The elements that he just said in his introduction can also pertain to me myself. So I just want to make sure people know I'm a Sugar Ray fan too.
Let's get to why I mentioned those things. This is episode
Lemonade and Brownies
number 31 of the podcast, which I believe makes it slightly older than Jake. But it's the first time that we have had this very special guest who we've been trying to book on Real Blend since day one. So everyone, please say hello to Entertainment Tonight's Ash Crossan on the show. Ash is with us. Say hello. Is she there? She froze. She dropped out. Did we lose her?
It's okay.
Ash, we took way too long to get to her.
She bailed out. She was on 100%.
Hold on. I think she's coming back.
Wait, do we have the option to just leave whenever we want to?
No, you can't just leave whenever you want to.
Why am I just now finding out 31 episodes in that we could just leave? I would have done that at like four Forrest Gump references ago.
Ash, I gave you a great setup if you didn't realize.
I know. Can you see me? Am I back?
You're back.
We can hear you.
We definitely hear you.
Oh.
Say hello to everyone, Ash.
I don't know. Hello, guys. I heard your introduction to me, and I thought it was wonderful because I do love Porgs and Sugar Ray and Whole Foods.
Well, then you fit in perfectly here.
You know, sometimes you just can't control Wi-Fi. It is what it is.
Well, some of you might be watching us on the Cinema Blend Facebook page, and so we want to say welcome. We're going to have Ash with us for the entire show. She's going to play along with all of our fun games.
Maybe.
As always, yeah, right, we can get these technical glitches worked out. Questions and comments can be dropped into the comment section below, and Gabe will bring them over to us. We'll address them as the show continues. The rest of you likely downloaded this episode later via iTunes or Spotify or the usual podcast apps, and we made a deal with you guys that if you leave us a review on our iTunes page, we are going to read it. And so you guys have been absolutely awesome about writing reviews. We actually got 3 new ones last week, which is totally incredible. Yes, but at the risk of just sitting here and gushing about ourselves and making Ash totally bored, she's back. We see her. Hello.
Yay!
We're only going to read one of them, and then we're going to save the others for our next show. So I want to read this one from Robert Shivery, who writes, "It has become apparent..." This is great. I say this every week, but this is really great. "It has become apparent that criticism in the movie industry by both fans and critics has become very jaded and violent. Reading reviews online sometimes feels like it is either a masterpiece or total crap. There is no gray area." And actually, we make that joke on this podcast all the time. If someone doesn't like something, it means that they totally hate it. It's a joke, though, and this guy gets it. "This podcast, though, darn if it isn't nice to have a place to safely listen to and interact with true professional nerds. Friends that remind you of what it is like to sit around a table and just geek out over movies. Best of all, they have different opinions, heralded with a level of professionalism and humor that is a true breath of fresh air. If you have any love of movies, then you belong here. These guys are a joy to listen to, and this podcast is something special." And he ends it with a Dunkirk in quotations marks exclamation point. So thank you very much, Robert, for that outstanding review.
Yeah, thank you for adding Dunkirk at the end. I honestly, that's my goal in life. Is that everybody ends every sentence that they say and everything they say to anybody, whether it be their parents, their children, anything, with the word Dunkirk. So you know, we're slowly moving that out, and it's happening in our reviews. I'm happy with that. So Dunkirk.
Ash, now that we have you back after the introduction, explain the Whole Foods thing to me. Why do people associate you with Whole Foods?
Oh my gosh. Well, I work in Burbank in LA, and there are no food options here, like when you want to go eat for lunch. So I was eating at like the same freaking place every day, which was Simsy's, which I still love Simsy's. But they put in a Whole Foods, and I went to it, and it has a full bar with like at least 20 beers on tap and like a great sushi selection.
I've always
wondered,
who are the people that drink at Whole Foods?
Me. I love it.
Can I say one thing about Whole Foods? And I love Whole Foods, but I'm weirdly a brand guy. So like when I buy Cheez-Its, I want them to be called Cheez-Its. But I think Whole Foods, I think it's all off brands, right? Nothing there is actual brands.
Well,
am I right
like
about
Trader
that?
Joe's, right?
Yeah,
I don't know. I just go around the outside. Like I haven't even gone up and down because they have a lot of like fresh food there. So when I'm like, you can go there for lunch and like pick up a salad or a pizza or a sushi.
Gotcha.
You do have really good sushi. Really good sushi.
Or 10 wines, like whatever you want.
We did not bring you on to talk sushi, believe
this
it or not.
Episode of Real Villain sponsored by Whole Foods.
By Whole Foods.
I'm trying to get sponsored by Whole Foods.
If Gabe is doing his work, then that's what's going to happen. We are going to play, what are we playing this week? We're playing hashtag Ridley Blend, the films of Sir Ridley. We are going to discuss Comic-Con coverage because Ash and I were both there and Kevin and Jake were playing along from home. We are going to, we're going to work in, Kevin had a great suggestion for a mini blend game about the stunts from Mission Impossible, where we discuss what we think are the best stunts from Mission Impossible. And we're going to start with news, like we always do. So let's dive right in, because I want to ask you guys now whether the casting of Robert De Niro and possibly Francis Conroy has you excited about this Joker movie. Does it make you more or less excited for the idea of this Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie? Don't all jump at once.
Who wants to go?
Ash, you go first.
I'll start. It's just like pure DC confusion. I'm like, oh my God, there's another Joker movie. Does this have anything to do with the current DCEU? I don't know what's going on. I'm obsessed with the cast. I love Joaquin Phoenix. Like De Niro, sure. Yeah, give it to me. But like, what the hell is going on? I'm so confused about it.
I don't think we know.
We've seen De Niro kind of play superheroes before. I think this is his first actual comic book film, right? In his entire filmography, if I'm right.
Yes.
But I mean, like, you could argue that Taxi Driver was a superhero element in the regards to what he was doing and helping out, you know, the Jodie Foster's character, but that was definitely a bit of a stretch. Yeah, I mean, listen, you could call it the Equalizer. He considers himself a superhero, and that's Denzel, but I think it's an interesting casting choice. I like this concept already because I think Todd Phillips is an interesting filmmaker to me. I think that The Hangover was one of the first comedies I ever saw that actually took cinematography very seriously. You know, comedies looked the same for a long time, and there are some sprinkled past before that did look really good, but I think that Phillips has a very, very technical way of storytelling, even when he drops it into a comedy. I mean, listen, Hangover looked incredible. I mean, it was a phenomenally beautiful film, but Road Trip is great too, so I'm interested to see what he brings to this. Also, Joaquin Phoenix, yeah, I mean, I'm still here. I still think it's one of the greatest performances in years, so I'm interested to see how wacky he gets with it, and the De Niro concept of him being a talk show host, reportedly from The Hollywood Reporter, sounds interesting as well.
Is it supposed to be a comedy?
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so, but I mean, we care about this because Scorsese's producing it, right? Like, so it's potentially Scorsese shaping a Joker
movie.
Is he
still producing it? Because ever since all these casting news announcements have come out, I haven't seen Scorsese's name attached to it anymore.
I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, I just feel like, I don't know, and we talked about this a few weeks ago. This is still, to me, just a really well-cast movie that I don't want to happen. I don't care who the Joker is or where he came from. The whole appeal to me of the Joker is that we don't know anything about him. I think once you start picking him apart and over-explaining him to me, then it just loses the mystery of who the Joker is.
Because if you cast Francis Conroy, they've said that she's going to play his mom. Like, I don't want to know who the Joker's mom is.
Oh, no.
I know.
Also, there's so many other Batman villains that are so good, and they've never gotten a movie. Like, we have, like, 90 million Joker movies.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I love Scarecrow. Yeah. Give me a Scarecrow movie.
Ooh, man, that should be really good.
I just find it interesting. And listen, I know Suicide Squad was very Very, very hated on. I still think the first act of that movie is legit, and I do think that Leto did a good job in the role. But I do find that, yeah, DC, I just don't know what's going to happen. Is it going to be produced well? Is it going to look well? I don't know. We'll see. But I think that I'm interested in seeing it only because Joaquin Phoenix is one of the best actors of our generation. And I think that he will definitely go full on with it. And I think Phillips being a director for it sounds interesting. And are the directors from Crazy Stupid Love doing another DC film as well? What are they doing?
Are, aren't those Birds of Prey with Margot Robbie?
I thought they were doing something with the DCU, EU. I don't know.
What's actually on the slate these days, though?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Exactly. Like, they all get announced.
And what does it mean to be on the DC slate? Essentially, you know, they're just throwing it out there, waiting to see where our reaction is. And then if we don't like it, they just sort of hope we forget about it.
Yeah. I think I'm on the DC slate. I think they're developing something around me.
I'd much rather watch a movie about your backstory than the Joker's backstory.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Ready Player One is out on DVD and Blu-ray, I believe. Yeah, you guys got copies of it?
Ooh, Kevin, yeah, have, on, you get mine.
Have you revisited it yet, Kevin?
Dude, yeah. We put it in immediately the moment it came in. My wife is amazing about getting steelbooks, as Jake just kind of pulled up here. Right. We love having the steelbooks in our house.
Right, if you're watching on the Facebook feed, Jake is about to hold up his steelbook.
I was on a Tom Cruise a couple weeks ago for vacation, and at the end of the cruise, the last day, they were showing Ready Player One on the back of the boat. So I forced my family to go down there and watch the film.
I love
on
that
vacation.
You spent your last day on a cruise watching a movie that comes out on Blu-ray in like 4
which he's
days.
Seen 5 times already.
Right.
Also, I will say this: there's something kind of crazy about being on the back of the second largest cruise ship in the world with 8,000 people aboard and on the back of the boat watching the water go by while two massive screens are playing the best film of 2018 so far.
Okay, there are 8,000 people on the boat. How many people were watching the movie?
Maybe 12.
Yeah, none. I saw the seats were empty.
That's okay. I mean, listen, some of the greatest movies of all time took a while to get some audiences. It's a Wonderful Life bombed at the box office.
We're not talking about box office. We're talking about the fact that you were on a cruise ship vacationing with your family and drove them to a movie that you've seen 5 times.
You know what? I support it.
Thank you, Ash.
Cruise ships get a little boring after a few days.
Listen, Ready? As long as Lauren
supports it.
Ready Player One is, honestly, there's nothing more exciting than that first race sequence during the first key, and seeing that on the big screen again was very, very amazing to watch.
How bad did that look on an outside screen?
Incredible. It was incredible.
Oh, really? It was still a good presentation? Because yeah, I'd be annoyed.
No, it looked fantastic. I mean, that movie, you guys all saw it. I think I saw it 5 times in theaters. It was an experience like unlike anything I'd ever seen before, especially the IMAX 3D element of it when you dive into the Oasis with Ty Sheridan for the first time. It was just mind-blowing. But that race scene.
I didn't watch the Honest trailer. Was the Honest trailer funny?
It's very funny, actually.
See, I wasn't as crazy about the Honest trailer. I thought it was easy punches that they were taking at it.
Ash, did you like Ready Player One?
I haven't seen it yet.
Wow. Everyone breathe.
Oh, God.
Everyone breathe.
I'm just going to hang up.
Yeah.
Don't you work in movies?
Yeah, but I don't see every single thing.
The real point I'm getting from this is she does not listen to Real Blend at all.
No.
Because she should know better than to admit to Kevin McCarthy that she hasn't seen Ready Player One.
In Ash's defense, there are big movies this year I haven't seen yet either based on scheduling. I haven't seen Skyscraper yet. I haven't seen a couple of
No, we're talking about good
films.
Movies.
No, did you see Skyscraper, though? No one saw it. I don't know if it was good or bad.
No, according to The Rock's Twitter account, he likes to remind us that it is the number one movie in the
number
world.
Number one globally. Number one. All right.
No, when they were screening it, I was somewhere, and then I just missed it, and then whatever.
What are your thoughts on Forrest Gump?
No, stop. Don't derail the podcast this quickly, please. should Henry Cavill use whatever pull he has to get Chris McQuarrie to direct Man of Steel 2?
Yes.
Does that mean we lose him from the Mission Impossible series?
Yes, you do. Do we need Man of Steel 2? And if we need it, does Chris McQuarrie need to direct it?
Is Snyder done?
Oh, yeah.
Snyder has washed his hands of DC?
Yes, Snyder has moved on. Do you think Chris McQuarrie can do a Superman movie?
Here's the thing. Yes.
Well, the thing about the Superman film, Man of Steel specifically, is it's Snyder, in my opinion, was very good with CGI. He worked with CG well. I think that McQuarrie is a very big practical guy, and I think that that shows, obviously, within the Mission films and Rogue and obviously Fallout. He mixes CG and practical well. I think that with a film like 300, when Snyder kind of directed it, basically the entire film Sin City style on green screen, he was able to make it, it pulled it off really well. So Man of Steel would require a lot of CG work. And I don't know if McQuarrie would be interested in going down that much with that much CG. I think he's a big practical guy. So I don't know how they would do that. I read a joke the other day that if Tom Cruise ever played Superman, they would have him flying for real. And I don't know how they would. I don't know. I don't think McQuarrie would dive into that. I don't know. It seems weird for him. But you never know.
Ash, why isn't Henry Cavill bigger than he is?
I think he's pretty big. I don't know. He's like Superman. But I also think a lot of it comes down to like the way that people behave and like interviews and stuff. And I think that if you're like a big personality and really fun and people really like engaging with you, you end up becoming a bigger star. Like Jennifer Lawrence, for example, when she first came around, it was like everybody wanted to watch all the interviews with her and be around her and meet her. And I don't know if Henry Cavill has necessarily done that. It seems like he's starting to like play a little more, but I feel like he didn't on his initial run.
It's true. He is ridiculously charming, though. We got a chance to sit down with him for a mission. And
you know when someone is like too handsome to be realistic for you to date?
Do
Like, that's like Henry Cavill, and I'm like
Kevin McCarthy.
I'm like not interested. You're too handsome.
No, I know Jake. When I first met Jake, he told me the exact same thing. So it's one of those things where
I'm too handsome to date.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, but I do. Can I say one thing about Man of Steel? Because I think Man of Steel was. I think one of the films that in the DCEU, it wasn't completely hated. Thankfully, there were half the people who actually loved that film. And I thought
I love Man of Steel. Dude, you and I were sat next to each other.
I almost went back to see it immediately after it ended. I think that film was a masterpiece. And I genuinely mean that. I think from start to finish, Hans Zimmer's score, Cavill's perfect in the role. I thought that Snyder did a brilliant job. I still cannot get over the way he shot those scenes with him and Michael Shannon fighting in midair, and the camera would like punch with us and fly back. It was amazing. And I understand the ending was very divisive. People were very upset that Superman actually killed somebody. But in that situation, I still argue that he made the right move, and he would have made that move. He saved that family by killing General Zod. So I think that that movie was very, very divisive, but I think it's genuinely one of the best superhero films ever made. And
I think miss that days when like that was what DC fans complained about, you know, like that was their biggest complaint, was like, well, I don't know if he really should have snapped that guy's neck at the end of the movie. And then ever since then, it's been like a downhill slide for huge, big problems
but
for DC fans to complain about.
How great is that opening with Russell Crowe? I mean, I thought that was unbelievable.
I actually don't like the opening of Man of Steel.
Love the opening of Man of Steel. I love that it shot
stuff on Krypton. Yeah, I'm not.
It shot like documentary style. I thought that it was so cool that we were flying with Cavill as Superman, like almost documentary style.
It would totally
so
be,
well done.
So if McQuarrie joined, it would definitely be a different direction. But I don't know.
Are they discussing that, or are we just playing?
In my head, they're discussing.
There's been like interviews where he says he's interested, but I don't think it's like anything real.
Yeah,
I
think
no,
just
I would totally do
him.
That.
Yeah, that kind of answer.
One thing I've found interesting recently with McQuarrie's Twitter, and I think we can all talk about this for a second. I think The Way of the Gun was a phenomenal film with Ryan Phillippe and Benicio del Toro, but hearing him talk about how he doesn't particularly like the movie is very interesting to me. I remember Fincher saying he didn't like the ending to The Game. And these are all films that I think we all know and love. So do you think it's interesting that filmmakers come out, you know, years later and say that they don't like their movie? I mean, I find that so interesting. Like The Way of the Gun, I know The Way of the Gun derailed him a little bit and it was not a success financially from what I understand. But to not like it, I find that fascinating. I don't know.
I think in every situation, the film that they're working on has to get released, and they might not have been 100% happy with it when it was finished. How many filmmakers walk away from their movie and be like, oh yeah, that was 100% what I wanted it to be? You know, things happen during production. Things have to get changed. I could see someone, especially early on in his career, where McQuarrie had to basically just answer to a lot of different people, get the movie released. He goes back and revisits it, sees the flaws that he thinks are there and isn't thrilled with it. When we get to Ridley, you know, later on, how many of his movies do you think he looks back on and thinks, oh, I could have done a better job with that one? He is wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, but The Way of the Gun's
a good
movie.
Think he's cocky enough so that he thinks all of his movies are awesome.
Oh, maybe. He might be. He might be.
I think we all do that, though. Like, how much of your own work do you go back and you're just oh, my God. But people probably are like, no, what are you talking about? That's amazing. But it's so rare to hear a filmmaker even, like, diss one of their own films. Like, I think that's such a rare thing.
I appreciate his honesty.
I do too.
Yeah, I might disagree with him, but I mean, I want to see him go back and rewatch the second Jack Reacher. I know it's not his. I just am curious what he thinks of how it went. Because the first one's so good, and the second one goes off the cliff.
Is the first one that good?
I didn't like Jack Reacher.
Oh, what? I love
it. It reminds me of like a movie that Seagal would have done in the early 90s, and not even a good one. It's like one that we wouldn't be talking about.
Yeah, I didn't like Jack Reacher either. I thought it was, and Jake and I say this a lot, it reminded me of like what, it's a movie that you would see within a movie. It's like what, it's like somebody, it's like what Tom Cruise. Yeah, it's like what Tom Cruise would do if someone was making fun of what Tom Cruise does in movies. Like they would have him in Jack Reacher.
Because the posters were all so generic, it was just him, like, in his, like, you know, standing. I don't know, yeah. All right.
Well, we still can't talk about Fallout just yet. I know we've been teasing Fallout for a couple of
weeks. I've been talking about, by the time it comes out, I'm not going to want to talk about it anymore.
Well, revisit it this weekend, because we're going to talk in depth
I've seen
it
twice already.
Next week. I should have gone. The only reason I didn't go on Monday is because it wasn't an IMAX. It was like a junky
theater. Oh, I saw
it
in IMAX, yeah.
So I'm really disappointed in that. So, but it opens this weekend. Give me your best guess domestically for how you think Fallout will do. The winner gets $100 from Gabe.
Yes. I say 60.
60?
Like opening?
Yes. Domestic.
Oh, I say 60. Yeah.
All right. Ash, any guess?
I was going to say 60, so I'm going to go 58.
Ooh, nice.
Ooh, you're that person.
Yeah.
Kevin?
You should play.
$1.
I'm trying to find out what... All right, so Rogue Nation's opening was $55 million, so I think it's going to be in that ballpark. I saw an article today that Hollywood Reporter said it'll do 50 plus. So I think 60, 62 is probably where it's going to end up. I mean, 55 for Rogue Nation.
You bastards, you're all choosing around me, so inevitably all of you, unless I land right at 60.
I'm going 85. No, I'm kidding. That's way too high.
Well, I mean, here's
it's 2.5 hours long. That's the problem.
I wish, but the reviews are so good.
Yeah, people are like going.
Did you see the article today that said the movie, after, because of his injuries and all said and done, is going to cost about $250 million to make?
Why? Because they put it on hold for that long?
I think so. Look up the article that I was scrolling through Twitter today. It said, with the injury and the delay of the production and everything that went into it and the practical stunts and things like that and all the Halo jumps and, you know, the helicopter stunts, I think they were saying about $250 million for the production budget.
Wow. That stuff's not cheap. Think about the Halo jumps. Are they doing 100 of them and you're paying for that? That's insane. It's a little bit excessive.
At some point in the show today, if we could, I know we're not going to get into the full-on reviews of that movie, but we got to talk about the focus pulling in that scene, because I still don't get it. And I remember seeing the movie and watching it and not being blown away by the footage I saw in the film. And now that I've researched it a lot more and just kind of like learned about the focus pulling aspect of it and how that cinematographer jumped out of the plane and kind of had to pull focus without being able to view what was happening in his shot
in the
is
camera.
Insane.
No,
that
is look in the
nuts.
He had to guess where he was going
to
be. All right, I'm going to say 65. I'm going big. I'm going higher than everyone else.
Okay, so since we have to give exact numbers based on the bet, because Gabe's sending us $100 for the winner. So, all right, Jake, you said
and a
Jake
cake.
Jake said 60 exactly. 60. All right, yep. Ash, yours was 50. What?
Eight. I'm actually going to write this down because I know Gabe's not producing, so I'm going to write it down.
58. I'm going to go with 59.
60.
Oh, God.
Come on.
I don't even want to play anymore. Dude, you guys...
And
it was $1.
It's all in the exact same realm. I mean, it's going to do $55 million or higher. We all know
that. I'm doing 65. All right. Okay. So, Gabe is going to send a cake and $100 and a bottle of wine to whoever gets closest.
I want a Whole Foods gift card.
And a Whole Foods gift card.
Why don't we give Gabe the ability to not have to pay out if he ends up getting it exactly right? So, Gabe, I know you're not speaking on the show, but
give us numbers.
Give us a number
to the decimal point. Like, he's got to be like 63.2.
If you hit it exactly, you don't have to pay out.
Otherwise, he pays out.
Yeah.
A Whole Foods gift card, a bottle of wine, a cake, and $100. I mean, it's getting to be an expensive bet.
Look how excited Gabe is.
I think that's worth it. 56.7. 56.7 is Gabe's bet. All
right.
I'm writing it down.
Gabe, you have to get exact. Why? You're making it more difficult for yourself.
And I do want to clarify, this is not based on Sunday estimates. This will be the Monday final number. Just a heads up.
It's Fair enough. Kevin suggested a very short blend game before we get into Comic-Con recap. Stunt
Blend. When have we ever done anything short on this podcast ever?
This is going to be brief. Yeah. The best stunt from the Mission Impossible franchise to date. And I'm going to let our guest go first. Ash, what do you think is, in your opinion, I know you haven't seen Fallout yet.
No.
But prior to that, the stunt that when you watch it, you just cannot believe that they let Tom Cruise do it.
Just because I watched the behind the scenes, it's the plane one.
The plane one?
When he's holding onto the plane, he like legit did that.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Could have died. Yeah. I mean, he could have died with like everything he does, but that one especially.
Yeah. I know that, like the wind in his face like did something to his eyes because you shouldn't expose your eyes to that those speeds.
What they did for that, which is absolutely mind-blowing, and I remember talking to interviewing Tom Cruise about that thing because I remember he had to wear special contacts because in the shot, Macquarie wants Tom Cruise's eyes open as we're looking at him taking off in his plane. So why don't we
obnoxious and crazy and amazing.
It's insane. So they basically put these special contacts in his eyes so that he could keep them open without them watering and or damaging. But the craziest thing about that stunt, in my opinion, is the guy that was next to him inside the plane that had a hole that his job was to punch Tom Cruise if a bird was coming in his direction that could decapitate him.
Oh my God.
I'm not kidding you. There was a guy, I mean, he's literally to the right of Tom Cruise. There's a hole, I guess, or some type of opening. And I guess someone at the front of the plane would somehow communicate back and say, there is a bird coming, tap Tom Cruise so that he can duck out of the way.
Would Cruise do if a bird were coming?
Remember when that goose broke Fabio's nose on that ride?
Yeah.
You know what ride that was, Ash?
Exactly a pop culture what I was reference today.
That was Apollo's Chariot at Busch Gardens in Williamsburg, Virginia, where I actually am from. And also, I remember that story.
Why is this the second time I've talked about this in like a week?
It's a good
Ash chose a good one, though. That's... God, that stunt is just insane. But yeah, there's so much detail that goes in. I mean, I think he did it like over a dozen times or something. It was crazy.
Jake, what's your choice?
The Burj Khalif in Ghost Protocol.
I don't know if I remember that one. What happens in that one?
He's hanging on a building, for God's sake.
The tallest building in the world?
Yeah, yeah. Tallest building in the world. And I don't know, what is that, the line where... They're like you're gonna fall or you're gonna die or something, like it's not going according to plan, and he just turns around and goes, "No shit," which is like just seemed like Ethan Hunt doesn't swear very often, so I feel like when he does, it just shows like this very real like that and that's why I like how this series treats Ethan Hunt is that he's not this invincible Superman, like he is very much a almost more of a rag doll in this series. I mean they beat him to hell and that's I'm a big fan of that stunt.
I chose that stunt also, the Burj Khalif, because for a couple of different reasons. One, in that one, Simon Pegg, the way that Benji plays that is always just like, well, of course you're going to do this. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that this is what you're going to do. I love that there's the one shot, like right around the time when you start to think like, he's not really doing this. Like, this is a stage, soundstage someplace or some sort of stunt double. They have that amazing pullback shot where they start zoom on him and then it goes just was so wide to show you the length of the building. And I love that Brad Bird has the balls to be like, not only was that whole thing so exciting, but when it gets back to the end and he jumps, I'm still going to throw one last, you know, he misses the window and falls and has to get caught by his feet. It's just, it's the best. It's a tremendous directed sequence. And that's my pick for.
But that's my, not that I have an issue with Ghost Protocol, but that's why I like Fallout better than Ghost Protocol. Because once that happens in Ghost Protocol, nothing else matches it. So it peaks halfway through and. To me, like, just everything that follows that is just not as good.
Kevin, your choice. I think I can guess your choice. Can I guess yours
before you give
him up? I thought he picked Burj
Khalifa. I went with the same one.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to piss the bridge. I thought you were doing the MI3 bridge.
You know what's funny about the bridge? And Tom Cruise was just in D.C. on Sunday for the premiere of Fallout. And right at the beginning of my question, I just kind of briefly said my favorite stunt of yours. One of my favorite stunts of yours is the bridge sequence in Mission Impossible 3 when Abrams catapults you against the car. He said, we planned that on Friday and we shot it on Monday. I thought that was insane. But
wait,
my favorite.
Did you ask him if it's a Chesapeake Bay Bridge leading into Delaware? By the way,
I didn't have time.
It's supposed to be the.
I love that bridge.
Yeah, it's great. It's so cinematic too. Like, wouldn't you want to plan a stunt on that bridge?
Yeah,
I love Three, man. I think Three is underrated.
Three, I had a great conversation with Michelle Monaghan about the scene with when in the beginning when Philip Seymour Hoffman shoots her, and it's just a very intense scene. But yeah, my favorite stunt, I think the best stunt of the whole series is the Burj Khalifa, no question. And I think the reason why, there's a lot of reasons why, but the reasons why for that were from the filmmaking side, but also Tom Cruise's side. Brad Bird shot that with full 65mm IMAX, the same cameras Nolan used for Dark Knight and Dunkirk and things like that. So when you got outside with Tom Cruise in that moment as he walks out and the aspect ratio of the screen, you know, of the image changed to that full massive IMAX shot. And I remember seeing that, I think it was Lincoln Square or somewhere,
Didn't you and I go back and see it again in New York?
I think so. And that's an 8-story IMAX screen. And that was honestly the first time I think I fully appreciated exactly what Tom Cruise was bringing to the movie game. I mean, it was genius. Never seen anything like it. Full on, just incredible thrills. But I do want to say this, and interestingly enough, and I mentioned this earlier, the Halo jump sequence in Fallout, I think the behind the scenes stories and footage is more thrilling than what we actually see in the film. And I say that because the film, you know, there's a lot going on. They add some digital effects in regards to the big storm that's happening there. I won't give too much away. But what Christopher McQuarrie pulled off with the Halo jump scene is truly a miracle. And I actually don't fully understand how it worked. But if you watch the movie when you see Mission Impossible Fallout, you will actually see the scene going in and out of focus. And McQuarrie kept that in because it looked almost like a documentary. Like they were genuinely filming a guy named Ethan Hunt just jumping out of an airplane trying to, you know, complete this mission. And the whole concept of having two focus pullers, and I'll keep this brief, but there was a gentleman in the plane.
We're losing him, Jake.
I know.
Go. All
right.
Go.
There was a guy in the plane pulling focus, right? Okay. He then had to switch it off and then give the guy who jumped with Tom Cruise the ability to pull focus from that point forward. So the guy jumps out of the plane backwards. Backwards.
That's insane.
Tom Cruise not only jumps out with him as Tom Cruise after he reconnects his oxygen, but he also has to catch up to the cameraman within 3 feet. And if he is a couple of inches off, the entire shot is blown, meaning that he will be completely out of focus. So they're falling at over 165-70 miles per hour. He has to catch up to this guy while also still in character, completing the scene itself, but also catching up so that the shot is not blown, and then falling. I mean, I don't get that. And the guy who's filming him has zero viewfinder. He can't see what he's filming. And so that's why Cruise is really kind of another camera there, because if he doesn't get in the right position, that shot is completely screwed up. So Cruise almost plays a cinematographer in that moment, which is insane to me. So that one, I think, is definitely up there, but Burj Khalifa, no question, hands down the best one.
All right, everyone's going to go see Fallout this weekend. We will have some time to discuss it next weekend.
Sorry, I had to discuss
that. Pay very close attention to the Halo jump, although it gets eclipsed by the bathroom fight, which takes place shortly after it.
Gets eclipsed by the Arc de Triomphe going against the traffic.
Eclipsed by the helicopter chase.
No. Jazz. The Arc de Triomphe scene is probably the most nervous I've ever felt watching Tom Cruise do a stunt, because it's full on oncoming traffic.
Next week, because we have Ash with us to talk San Diego Comic-Con, which the two of us immersed ourselves in for the past couple of days.
Oh, did the two of you have a wonderful time?
Well, but part of me wants to find out from you guys what it's like to track Comic-Con as it's happening and you're not there.
Oh, it's wonderful, Sean. It's wonderful to watch all of your friends having a glorious time and seeing stuff before they get to see you and hanging out with movie stars. That's great.
Ash, what is your setup like at Comic-Con? What do you do for the most part while you're there?
Well, there's so many, there's so many components to it. And I always tell people, because people are like, did you see all these trailers in Hall H? Did you see everything that was going on? I'm like, I didn't set foot in Hall H. Like, there's so much going on. So we have our, you know, most outlets have an interview suite or somewhere where all the cast will come through and do interviews. Plus, there's carpets backstage on Hall H. Plus, anything going on the floor that you want to cover. plus Hall H, plus Ballroom 20, plus all of the other panels happening. So you really have to bring like a big team there and divide and conquer. Mm-hmm. And what I was doing most of the time was interviews out of our interview suite and stuff on the carpet and stuff on the floor. So I didn't even set foot in Hall H. But it is funny because people, like, I didn't even catch up on all the trailers until I was back from Comic-Con. I was
interesting.
Like, people that are home watching Comic-Con and following along on their computers usually have a way better grasp of what's happening at Comic-Con than the people that are actually there.
Totally agree. Yeah, no, I totally agree, because you may know that a panel is happening, but you can't pay any attention to it because you're hosting someone from a TV show or some such comic book that's coming through, or because the talent is in Hall H at their own panel, you have talent from a different panel coming through.
Yeah, and unless it's like a Star Wars trailer that just dropped, I don't want to watch it on my phone. Like, I want to get in front of my laptop, put my headphones on, and like immerse myself in it.
What do you guys think, now that we've caught up on everything, was the coolest bit of footage that came out of the weekend?
For me, it was the Shazam trailer. Like, I think Warner Brothers, like the Glass one was cool, and like a lot of these trailers were really cool, but I expect those movies to be really good, so I'm not as like immersed in the trailer part, but Warner Brothers, like, you never know, you know, it could go either way. So Shazam was the one where I was like very pleasantly surprised by that trailer. Aquaman, awesome. Surprisingly, I had the opposite effect. I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know anymore.
Yeah. Aquaman gave me a Green Lantern vibe, which is never good. Yeah. For me, it's Glass. I've always been sort of a Shyamalan apologizer, and he's had a rough few years, so it's nice to sort of see him. I mean, 5 years ago, could you imagine that Shyamalan would be at Comic-Con with everyone sort of going nuts over a new trailer he put out? Like, that's astounding to me. So the fact that he's bounced back, I'm looking forward to seeing the ending to a story that I didn't even know existed up until about 2 years ago. So I just the way he shot it, and I'm sort of curious as to how the whole thing's going to work. Sean, I know you saw some stuff at CinemaCon. I'm really intrigued about the fact that they're all like in this mental asylum. I think that's a brilliant way to sort of bring them all together. So I'm super into that.
But also Godzilla. I'm 100% on. Oh, I want to go back to Godzilla. I'm 100% on board with Glass also, because I think the cast looks amazing. Anytime that we get to spend more time with McAvoy's character from Split, I mean, the fact that he jumps back and forth through all those different personalities.
I think
fantastic.
He deserved an Oscar nomination for Split. I thought he was.
I'm not
going to
argue with you on that. He's great. But then someone, like, you know, like when you're super excited for something and then somebody throws out one quick line and deflates your enthusiasm, they're like, wait, hold on. Sarah Paulson is what? She's a psychiatrist who specializes in delusions of grandeur for people who think they're superheroes. And I was like, shut up. Just go with it. Yes, that's what she does. Yeah, and it works. And
like,
leave us alone.
Like, you have a guy who is like amazingly strong, a guy who like can turn himself into a physical beast, but the part of the plot that bothers you is that she's a psychiatrist. Like,
yeah, I know. Who specializes in that weird thing. So
just roll with it.
Kevin, what about you? What'd you see that blew your mind?
Glass, for sure. And I do want to say this. My Split experience wasn't as mind-blowing for a lot of people that it was for them, because I hadn't rewatched Unbreakable in a long time. I mean, I saw Unbreakable. Yeah, and I, when I saw Unbreakable for the first time, I absolutely loved it, but it had been so many years, so when that reveal happened at the end, when you actually walk into that diner and you see Bruce Willis's character, it didn't hit me, and I think that was a moment where I wanted to feel the excitement that everybody else felt, so when I went back and revisited Unbreakable after Split, it was truly a connective experience in regards to my excitement level being brought in and heightened up for what M. Night Shyamalan could possibly do with this universe, this world. And that trailer for Glass is unreal. And Ash, I'm happy to hear someone else say that, because I walked out, I'm like, that was cool, okay, that was the Unbreakable tie-in, but I didn't feel it like I wanted to, and then it was the rewatch of Unbreakable, which, by the way, the opening on Unbreakable on that train as the camera's panning back and forth with the chairs is just, it's unbelievable. And that movie, I think, got a little bit of a backseat element because The Sixth Sense was so damn good. That when that film hit, it was this question of whether or not can it be as good, or, you know, is it as good? And I think that Unbreakable was kind of heavily criticized based on the success and the great element of what Sixth Sense was. So yeah, the Glass footage is unbelievable. The opening with Sarah Paulson was fantastic. I love seeing all three of them sit there. I still think the most horrifying shot in that trailer is watching McAvoy's character run on all fours. Like, as he's leaping through that park or whatever it is, that scares me so much, just watching that guy do that. I don't know why. But yeah, I agree with you, Jake. I think he deserved an Academy Award nomination for that. It's a phenomenal performance. So yeah, the glass footage. I did not care for the Shazam footage. And I know.
It looks fun. It looks like big.
Exactly. I don't think that, I think that that was the trailer that I found to be very overrated. I was in, because Aquaman, I think we all know it looks awful. That trailer is terrible.
And I hate saying
I feel
that.
Like this time three weeks ago, I was the one trashing Aquaman and you guys were like, no, it's going to be good. It's James Wan.
I love James Wan. I do love James Wan. I had a lot of hope for that trailer, but this is your first splashy date. Oh, no pun intended. This, you're debuting this trailer for the first time in front of this huge audience, and that's what you came up with? I was a little disappointed.
I was so hyped for that movie, and then, like especially last year, they were even teasing it last year, and they showed that, like, little teaser, and it was so bright and colorful, and I was like, yes, it's gonna be all bright and lovely like Wonder Woman, and then I saw it, and I was like, just, like, the wig on Amber Heard, and, like, they just, I don't know, I was just not into
it's
it at all.
It's honestly very bland. It genuinely is. I think that the... Listen, I love James Wan, and I love what he's given us through film. I think the Conjuring films are shot incredibly well, and I think the Saw franchise, whatever it became, it still started very strong in regards to what he did for horror movies. And then The Furious 7 was amazing. I am excited to see it only because I think that James Wan will somehow turn it around and make it a better film than the trailer.
Every line of dialogue out of Momoa's mouth in that trailer is horrendous.
But remember this. Remember this for 1 second. The Suicide Squad trailer was a 5 out of 5. It was a perfect, perfect trailer. And that movie was bad. So
that's fine. No, I agree. That's why I even, as much as I love the Shazam footage, I'm worried that that might go in the other direction. But I'll say, I came back from Comic-Con. I pulled up a lot of the trailers and showed them to my boys because they didn't really pay a ton of attention to Comic-Con while we were gone. And the only one that really resonated with them was Shazam. The minute that Zachary Levi does that floss dance, they clapped and cheered and they were like, 100%, we're on board with this. This looks great. And then I showed them
Sean, I'm not familiar with what dance you're working.
Well, it's like a floss. It's like your hands go this way and then back that way. And I can't do it, but my kids can do it really, really well.
You're doing it pretty well. I'm pretty impressed.
I did it okay. Pretty good.
I like the Kendrick Lamar song that's playing there too, which is
good. Yeah, that was really good also. Yeah.
Humble. But listen, the Shazam trailer, I don't know. I understand everyone's excitement for it. I think it looks okay. I just think that I think every line felt like it was DC trying to be Marvel. Like finding
I feel like the opposite. I feel like it's a very easily digestible, like just a fine, like it also, I feel like there are really no massive expectations it has to live up to. All it has to do is be fun.
I'm sure it'll be fun. I just think that the big element of it is very obvious, and I have no problem with them paying homage to that movie. I just didn't find a lot of the humor to grab me. But I also remember we also disagree on Thor Ragnarok a lot. So humor is an interesting thing.
But also, like, hasn't like Shazam been around long? I mean, it's been around longer than Big, right? So are they really paying tribute to Big, or is
true?
I mean, like, you can't really knock. That's like knocking. You know, I don't know. I can't come up with anything, but like, I think Shazam's been around. I could be wrong. Someone on Facebook, let me know whether I'm wrong. I usually
can somebody please explain the Captain Marvel connections? I don't get that to Shazam. Does anybody know about this?
Named Captain Marvel, right? Like in the
comics,
Captain
Shazam.
Marvel. Yeah, but they can't name him Captain Marvel in the movie because of obvious reasons. But
are they different characters? I'm confused because Captain Marvel is a woman in the Marvel. But how did they get away with that in the comics for years? Like, how did DC have a character called Captain Marvel, and then so did Marvel? How did that work?
That I do
that
not
part
know.
I don't know the answer to.
That's okay. Nerd stuff. That's
just curious.
Someone will let us know. Jake, what'd you love about Godzilla? Because that trailer blew me away.
Here's what I'll say. It was both incredibly exciting, sort of seeing every one. I have a bro crush on Kyle Chandler, so anything that he's in, I clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose.
That's not what I would have guessed. When you said crush, I was going in any other direction but Kyle Chandler.
I'm a big Kyle Chandler fan. But also just seeing all the collection of the monsters together. It's also a little bit of a tease because I am so ready for Godzilla versus King Kong. So it's a little bit like, let's hurry up and get through this one so we can get to Godzilla versus King Kong. That being said, seeing Mothra, seeing like everyone sort of back like in one big giant movie together. I feel like our generation hasn't gotten that in a massive big budget form. So it'll be really cool to see. My biggest complaint about the 2014 Godzilla is that, unlike sort of something like Jaws or Alien, where it doesn't show the monster, I'm fine with not showing the monster that much, but the humans have to be interesting enough to sustain the moments where the monster's not in it. And once they killed off Cranston in the 2014 Godzilla, I lost all interest. I did not care about Aaron Taylor-Johnson. I just checked out. And that's why I just found the 2014 Godzilla to be so boring. Not because they didn't show the monster, but because the humans they showed weren't interesting. So I hope that they learned their lesson from that.
Completely agree with you on the Cranston thing. I was so shocked by that. And it just felt like they were writing him out because of a scheduling thing. Like, there was no way that they just wrote him out like that. I mean, this was a huge, huge character, a huge thing for him to be involved in after Breaking Bad. And it was very weird. So I'm with you, Jake. I don't think the Godzilla trailer, nothing really about that trailer excited me either. Lauren and I were watching it together, and the first thing we said to ourselves was, another Godzilla movie. And that's not, I mean, listen, it looks cool. The shots look cool. I actually liked Kong Skull Island a lot.
So did I. I was with you. It was like Apocalypse Now, but with King Kong.
Very impressive. I mean, the Vietnam. What war was?
It was Vietnam.
It was Vietnam. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was that movie was cool. I love the beginning. I love the sky. It was cool. I just don't find that trailer did anything for me. I'll see it, of course. But like I said, the weird thing about Comic-Con this year is the best thing that came out of it, in my opinion, was the Glass trailer, which is a little bit, while it is superhero-esque, it's different. But Sean and Ash, I'm wondering, where was Venom? Where was the presence of Venom at Comic-Con?
It was there. They just didn't post the footage.
Yeah, they had a panel, like a full panel for Venom, and then they didn't. There was no new trailer, right? Like,
I think it's coming out this week footage. At some point.
Well, I did the carpet backstage, and it was such a bummer because Tom Hardy didn't do the carpet.
Why would he do the carpet?
Yeah, so I'm, like, sitting there waiting for him, and they're like, he's not coming. He has a scheduling conflict. He has to go straight to the panel. But that was, like, a huge bummer because I was like, okay, this is, like, when I'm supposed to get excited about the movie. And I talked to the director, and I talked to Riz Ahmed, but that was it from that movie.
See, I did that carpet. I didn't even get Riz Ahmed. He skipped right over me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I got the director.
Does he know you're close personal friends with Tom Cruise?
The only thing Clearly I asked not. The director, because I was like, I'm not even sold on this movie. And I was just like, how do you feel about the entire internet being sexually attracted to Venom?
That's a great question.
What was his answer?
He was like, you know, I did see that. Did not expect that to be the reaction. But the internet's a weird place. And I went really deep into it. And I don't recommend that anyone else do that.
That's funny. Ash, what carpets did you do besides Venom? I'm curious.
Venom was with Into the Spider-Verse and then Bumblebee. So those were the only carpets that I did. I think the only other one that they even had was WB, and somebody else did that. And then I did interviews with, like, Kevin Smith and the Super Troopers guys. And
how was Kevin Smith? Because I grew up on him, and I know Jake and I and Sean were all obsessed with him. I think that we all have our own Kevin Smith stories, but I love that he's doing stuff now, kind of like interview wise with, like, IMDb and things like that. What did you specifically interview him for? What was it about?
It was about his show Hollyweed, but then I had a bunch of questions for him because, like, Clerks is in, like, my top five movies of all time. I love it so much. And I know he's, like, the biggest Degrassi fan, and Degrassi was, like, my favorite show ever. So I was just, like, kind of my like, the way to get into it, I was just like, so when's the Degrassi panel? And he was like, oh, my God, I love Degrassi. And then I just talked to him about Degrassi for, like, 5 full minutes, which is, you know, when you're doing interviews, most of the chunk of the interview.
Entertainment Tonight goes, what are we going to do with all of this?
They were
footage?
Probably like, oh my God, whatever.
Did you go to the boat? Did you go to the IMDb?
I went to the boat, yeah.
Oh, okay. Really? I thought maybe he came to you because he doesn't go to anybody at Comic-Con. He just sits on the boat.
I had to go to him. That's hilarious. I had to go to him. And we like set up all these chairs and stuff, and he goes up and throws one of the chairs. He's like, we're standing.
I was like, okay. Oh, yeah. I had that similar experience when I interviewed him here in Chicago. We set up this whole set and everything, and we lit it and everything, and all of a sudden he walks in and he's like, yeah, I'm not sitting down, I'm standing. So we had to really quick, like, pull all of our lights back together. Yeah, for 30. But he'd rather stand for 30 minutes than sit for 5.
Yeah. And I'm not even trying to make him sound like he was a jerk or anything. He was, like, sweetest, coolest, like, most personable person I've, like, ever. But it was just funny. He walked in. He's like, nope, not doing that.
We talk a lot about, like fandom and things we want to see and storylines. Like, we discuss Star Wars a lot on this show and, you know, what, you know, like, essentially Rogue One was basically, you know, it was fan fiction. It was amazing. So I was thinking if I could ever see anything fan-wise that extended out from the original films, it would be the Jay and Silent Bob Goodwill Hunting 2 hunting season bit into a full length movie. That would be like my dream. If I could see Affleck and Damon come back and actually shoot Goodwill Hunting 2 Hunting Season, and if every joke is applesauce, do you actually want to see that?
Okay, you're talking about like one of the great dramas of the 90s being turned into a joke.
Dude, first of all, I will watch Gus Van Sant count money.
I mean, I get that you like that scene, and I get that it's funny, but I feel like deep down you're not understanding what you're saying when you say that you want to see that movie.
Every time I walk into Matt Damon's room for an interview, I say, I don't know, Will, what are we gonna do?
I'm sure he loves that.
And this is why Matt Damon stopped doing junkets.
Yeah, no, dude.
Ash, what was your favorite interview while you were there?
It had to, well, okay, this is like a deep cut, but I'm like, I love Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And so I got to go on the last day, like just impromptu, go interview like three of the original Power Rangers. And that was really fun. And then, aside from that, Kevin Smith was the best. Like I never got to meet him before. And I feel like everyone else has. And I was so excited.
Ooh, I didn't think I was going to say this during the podcast, but I have a Power Rangers question.
Yeah. Ooh.
Okay. So Billy, the actor that played Billy, didn't he come out and say that he felt harassed on set for being gay? And I'm curious does he still associate with any of the original cast members? Because I know I think I saw your picture with the guy that played Zach.
Yeah.
Do they talk at all? Or what is their relationship now?
So all the original cast, they're best friends. They're all like, they all have a good relationship. But what happened was when they were doing the original show, three of the original ones, the yellow, black, and red ranger, they were getting paid like $2 an hour. I'm exaggerating the story a little bit, but they were getting paid not enough. So they left the show like halfway through, like in the first season, that you can clearly see they were written off, and then like doubles were used in stock footage. And then the guy that played Billy ended up leaving because he was getting harassed on set after he came out. But that was like all with like Saban Entertainment.
Gotcha.
So I think like they're not really associated with that branding anymore. So they all have a good relationship with each other.
It's but amazing, like, because I was obsessed with that as a kid. You never know as a kid that all this stuff's going on behind the scenes.
And yeah, it's crazy. I've openly talked to him about all of that. It's really interesting.
I liked the new Power Rangers movie that came out a couple years ago. I thought that was really well done. I don't know why, but I liked it. I thought it was fun.
But, I liked the ending of it. Like once they like went full on Zords and like embraced the roots of it, but they were trying too hard to be like gritty and real, and I was like, just be cheesy. Just go for it.
Did you get Keegan Michael Key with the Predator cast?
I didn't. I think Kevin Frazier did that.
Oh, they came through our suite, and he is just the greatest interview of all time. Like you could just throw anything at him and he takes it and runs with it, and it was delightful.
I interviewed him for Keanu and he was amazing.
Yeah. As opposed to going over to Cinema Blend's feed, and I'm going to put this onto the Real Blend feed too. And Ash, tell me if this happened to you on Saturday. We had the cast of Big Hero 6, the animated cast, and I was having to do yet another introduction to yet another interview coming through, and my exhaustion finally showed, and I gave a, we are still here covering Comic-Con, and I didn't mean it that way at all, but it's just how it came out, and they picked up on it and totally just
It's not just the fact that you said the word still. It's the like how you said, because if you'd be like, hey guys, we're still here, but the fact that you just sounded so defeated, you're just like,
I did.
We are still here covering comedy.
I mean,
just the way you said it was amazing.
I did a couple like where I would like, I couldn't grasp what day it was at Comic-Con. So I would like talk to people and be like, it's day two. No, it isn't. I didn't know what day it was. Especially because our days end on the Saturday and Comic-Con goes till Sunday, that it's like, just so confusing what day it is. But I did do a couple where I was like, it feels like day 19 here at Comic-Con.
I want to ask Ash a question, and you guys can definitely weigh in on this, but this year was characterized by the absence of Marvel being in Hall H, and you know, I think DC sort of filled the void a bit, but it makes me wonder if Marvel and Disney, and by that I mean Star Wars, might not just they just won't go back to Comic-Con anymore. Do you think we're in a scenario now where because of Celebration and maybe Marvel doing their own thing potentially that they just don't go back to Comic-Con anymore?
I think they want to put all their weight into D23 and Star Wars Celebration, specifically D23, but I don't think they'll never not go back to Comic-Con. I think it was just like a downswing year because they couldn't talk about Avengers and Star Wars. They don't have anything to talk about. I mean, except the Clone Wars. But I think, I mean, we saw them do D23 followed by Comic-Con before last year, right? Was that last year? Where they pretty much did like a very like a similar panel. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that, like especially for the fan part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a question. I was sort of wondering, to your point about how, you know, Disney's sort of doing their own thing, Marvel's doing their own thing, and in theory, Lucasfilm could start doing their, you know, if they start announcing stuff at Celebration rather than Comic-Con, could Comic-Con sort of be the equivalent of like a Netflix, where like for so many years, everything was on Netflix, and then individually, one by one, studios realized, well, if we do our own thing, then we can sort of control it and disperse information that we want to have it dispersed and not be rushed into releasing information if we're not ready to release it. Like, could we start seeing just things pulling out? And I don't like trying to like, you know, stand on a soapbox and with a sign that says the end is near, but like, are we heading into a trajectory that spells out the end of Comic-Con if studios are just going to start releasing things on their own time and their own events?
Yeah, I think that that could eventually happen because from everything you hear behind the scenes, and this is inside baseball, is that just Comic-Con as an organization is a little bit difficult to deal with because they have the upper hand, and a lot of the studios just sort of feel like, why do we go through the rigmarole of bringing all of this footage? Now, the studios will turn around and say, look, it's for the fans. You know, it's not, we're not trying to break news, and we're not trying to do this for it. And there isn't a lot of breaking news coming out of it. We do see some first look trailers, but a lot of those things hit online right after. So they do want to sort of reward the fans that go there to do it. But I've also heard on the flip side, if we go all the way to Comic-Con and we work hard to bring talent and we have a panel where the footage doesn't play for whatever reason, then we just shot ourselves in the foot and it was a really expensive mistake, you know? So I don't know. I think Ash is right. I don't think Comic-Con is ever going to really stop having that stuff, but I just know Kevin Feige, Marvel president Kevin Feige, said to us years ago, there will never be a time where Marvel's not there, because we still just like doing a panel for the fans. And this was the first year that they didn't go. And I was like, oh, maybe this is it. Maybe this is starting to lean that direction. So I don't know.
I also just see it. I mean, more and more, it feels like every year it's more and more TV and less studios attending. So
yeah,
you do have to wonder if that's eventually just going to completely take over.
Yeah, very true. Because it's always like Fear the Walking Dead and things like Game of Thrones or Stranger
and
Things.
And CinemaCon this year felt bigger than ever. Like that felt like the place that all the like the media needs to be at, you know?
Absolutely. You know, Sean and Ash, you guys were there. There was a huge viral tweet that went out, like I guess right before Comic-Con, where a gentleman built the Spider-Man costume from Avengers Infinity War. It actually it physically
that was
like,
cool. That was
it
really
was
cool.
Awesome. Did you guys ever see that person? One or two? What was the most insane costume you guys saw when you were there?
I did see that guy. I was like walking back and forth from my hotel, and he happened to be walking by, and I was like, "Oh my god, sick costume!" But I also find, like, at Comic-Con, it's, like, the middle of July, and it's so freaking hot that so many people, like, bail on their cosplay by, like, the second day. People are like, oh, absolutely not.
What was the Mark Hamill story? Like, someone said that he dressed up, but he didn't do it. What was that story?
Oh, I have this story because I actually know the guy that was dressed up as Darth Trump.
What happened?
Nah. This guy that I used to do improv with had texted me and was like, hey, I'll be around the floor dressed as Darth Trump. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I see the next day that a bunch of people are writing up these articles saying that they met Mark Hamill. And I texted him and I was like, what is the deal with this? And he was like, Mark Hamill said that he was on the floor and somebody asked me if I was Mark Hamill. And I said, Mark who? And people just ran with it. And then Mark, I guess at some point, took credit for it on Twitter to, I don't know, throw off the scent of who he was actually dressed as, if he was even there. And a bunch of outlets like wrote it up as fact, and
oh, okay,
yeah.
He then had to clear it up and say it wasn't me.
Yeah,
eventually
he eventually was like, "Got you guys so good." And everyone's like, "What?"
He definitely played along with it for a while.
Like, why is
like,
this
would I
because
really
it was an ongoing bit?
Myself?
Like he kept like retweet, like people would be like, "Oh, it's like saw Mark Hamill here," and he'd be like, "Oh, you caught me." So I think it was just one of many he was going along with, but that's the one that stuck.
Do you think he was actually there, though, as someone? I've seen, like, famous stories of, like, famous actors. We've seen it before.
Cranston.
Somebody walks around in a costume and it
John
ends up.
John Cena did it this year.
Right. What did he do? Who was his costume?
He dressed up as Bumblebee.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's cool. I love that kind of stuff.
I shook hands with John Cena on that press carpet, and his hands are like catcher's mitts. It's, like, intimidating. He's a gigantic dude.
He's also incredibly nice.
Oh my God! So the girl from E with an exclamation point, not ET, was next to us, Not you guys, Ash. And she had two questions. Had two questions, just two questions. And then John can come down the line. Two questions, everybody, two questions. She asked about Seven. She just kept talking and just kept talking. To the point where the publicist gave me a look like she was talking to John Cena. And the publicist gave me a look like, can you believe this girl? And I was like, how about you tap her arm? Or hit her shoulder. Do something. Get her to stop talking. And so
Entertainment Tonight would never do that.
Never.
That's the game, though. They're always like one question, and you're like, no.
Yeah. So Cena
comes over
to me. And then
you just see what you can get away with.
He comes over after, and he goes, I really apologize for that. And I was like, no problem, John Cena. I'll wait for you to come over. And he was just so nice. He was so incredibly nice about it. So Comic-Con coverage will continue to roll out. We'll keep talking about these things as they drop, especially as we get closer to such things as Glass and Aquaman and Halloween. And Kevin has a question.
Just one more thing about Shazam. I want to make it clear. I think the trailer looks okay. I just think that I'm interested in
you
it. I just
hate
didn't think
Shazam.
It was any- No, I just didn't think it was as mind-blowing as everyone said it was. That's all.
Why do you hate happiness?
That's all. I think it looks cool, but I mean, I just wasn't... Glass was the one that kind of floored me a little bit. That was the one that really kind of... But nothing this year outside of Glass really shook me like that. I wanted. I don't know what the vibe was at Comic-Con for you guys. I know Shazam kind of became a huge deal, and I know, Ash, you said you didn't watch until you got back, but other than that, was it that much of an exciting year in regards to just... Overall,
felt like pretty low key this year.
It felt
I felt like this was the most low key year that I've ever attended.
Yeah, and I felt that just through Twitter. I mean, I felt that at home as well. So I thought that was interesting. But I think that once Marvel kind of gets back into the game, you know, having that entire Avengers cast there, you know, there's nothing better than that energy of having all those guys there and all the you know the amazing cast there. So we'll see.
This year,
dude, am I the only one excited for Christopher Robin? I keep seeing trailers off out of this. Dude, I am not emotionally ready for this movie.
I'm excited. I just feel like it's all those movies that we always get, like Saving Mr. Banks and stuff, where I'm like, I'm excited about it, and then I watch it, and I'm like, all right, I saw that. Yeah,
it looks cute.
Sean,
what sort of childhood did you people have? What is wrong with you? How are you not emotionally destroyed? Sometimes Sean, your past catches up with you, and his past is Winnie the Pooh.
I know.
Sean, you know this.
Damn it, Sean.
You work for a site. I don't know... if this is true or not, I read this online the other day that is there a First Man prologue this weekend before Mission Impossible? Did I misread that?
Because I heard that from you. That's the first I've heard that from.
It came across my Twitter feed that there's going to be some, because we all know that Christopher Nolan's famous for his prologues. I mean, those, the Dark Knight, all those prologues. I mean, those are like big event moments, like having like the prologue released for Dark Knight Rises and Dark Knight and whatever it was.
That's how they determined that Hardy's voice couldn't be heard in a theater.
I know.
And he had to go back and remix it.
I heard there's a 4-minute prologue somehow happening before Mission Impossible this weekend, which is strange to me for two reasons. One, Universal Pictures did First Man and Mission Impossible's Paramount, so why would they pair those two? Maybe I don't know. But I think it's
ordered Gabe to do something.
But remember, Mission Impossible's in IMAX, and First Man was shot with 70mm IMAX cameras for some of the scenes, so it makes sense. And the movie could use a good bump right now, I think, maybe. The movie doesn't open until October, I believe.
Film festivals. They just got revealed that week. So we're going to shift into this week's game, and if Gabe gets me, he's got nothing. I've got nothing, Gabe says.
Okay.
He actually admits. You might have just made this up. I hope you will it to happen, though.
I read it. One.
I would go back and watch Mission in IMAX to see the First Man footage.
I do want to see Mission in IMAX again on a bigger screen.
It's awesome
screen,
in IMAX.
But I've seen it in IMAX, but just for people out there who, just to clarify something, this is not Nolan's IMAX. Brad Bird did IMAX for real with Ghost Protocol. This is digital IMAX cameras. Now, granted, you have to give Macquarie credit because the IMAX sequences are the Halo jump, from what I understand, and then the helicopter, which are probably impossible to shoot with gigantic IMAX cameras. So he did
the helicopter stuff, but not the stuff with Ferguson and Simon Pegg on the ground. So it does a lot of that.
Oh, that's weird.
Big, little, big, little, big, little.
Yeah.
Anytime it goes back to them on the ground, it's not IMAX.
Yeah, and Nolan was famous for that with The Dark Knight and Dunkirk and Interstellar, but those were shot with actual 65mm IMAX cameras, so gigantic, massive cameras. So this is very similar to what the Russos did with Captain America Civil War. So if you see this movie in an IMAX theater, it's going to jump to the IMAX aspect ratio, but it's not going to be the full-blown Christopher Nolan-style IMAX we've seen before, or what Brad Bird did with Ghost Protocol. So just a heads up, people out there who are kind of IMAX nerds and film nerds, you'll get the aspect ratio change, but it's not as big of a jump as you think you would get from like a Nolan movie.
I was so excited to do this week's hashtag blend game, because we're going to do the films of Sir Ridley. And yet we all picked the same movie. All four of us picked the same movie. So Ash, please tell us what movie we picked as the best film in Sir Ridley Scott's filmography.
We all picked Alien.
Yeah, for me it was between Alien and Blade Runner. Did you guys say, was it tough for you guys?
I acknowledge that Blade Runner is like great, but I didn't like get on board with that movie till much later. Like Alien's way. Totally different ballgame for me. That's I also, like, for whatever reason, like, loved Matchstick Men when I was
Yes! Oh, so that's the one I was going to choose!
I love Matchstick Men.
I watched it all the time, so I, like, almost picked it, and then I was like, wait, we're doing best, not best. Just, yeah. like,
And when we do good, this game, when we do this game, there's a huge distinction between best and favorite, and quite yes, often we
I,
all have...
I agree with that.
Matchstick Men is one of his best movies, great though. Great movie. It's weird because when it comes to Ridley Scott, I prefer Tony Scott movies personally over Ridley Scott movies, but Ridley Scott
except Top Gun.
Yeah, I like Top Gun, I just don't love it like everybody else does. But I think that, I mean, Man on Fire, whatever,
dude,
so
Man
good.
On Fire,
Man cool. on Fire is amazing. I prefer Tony Scott's style, but Alien is clearly it has to be his best movie. Also, not only because of the restrictions of effects at the time. Fully on practical aliens. It was unreal what he pulled off with that movie and essentially making a horror film and the use of sound, editing, everything. I still prefer Cameron's Aliens to Alien. Yeah, but I do think Alien is Ridley Scott's best movie, hands down. I mean, it's a masterclass in horror and a masterclass in minimal. It's subtle and it's minimal. It's not a lot in your face. It's very, very... it builds so well, and I think that's what, and you know, Weaver's just, you know, she's an absolute genius in that film. So great movie. Yeah.
Jake, what made you choose it? Oh, sorry, Ash.
Go ahead.
No, all you.
Oh, me? Okay. Well, that's what I just like. I'm realizing from being on this podcast with you guys that we have like slightly different tastes in movies, which is great. But I don't love like an action-packed movie that's super in your face, like you said. Like, I love this movie because it's so suspenseful and it's very about the characters. And it can do all these subtle things that really freak you out and realize how impactful they are. And that's why I love that movie.
In fact, I'd argue it's scarier when the xenomorph is not there.
As Agreed.
When the xenomorph is. I mean, and luckily, once you see the xenomorph visually, it's just this unbelievably perfectly designed creature, this monster. But just the dread of... not knowing where something is. And to me, like, one thing somewhere around is to me so much more suspenseful than a bunch of things running around. Like, that's why I prefer Alien over Aliens. I would rather watch Alien 100 times than watch Aliens once.
See, I would put Aliens in before Alien, but I agree that they're, well, first of all, they're two completely different movies.
Very true.
But, you know, what you say about Alien is exactly how I feel about Jaws, even though Jaws was never intended to be that minimal-esque shark. The shark was supposed to be a major part of the movie, but because of the breakdowns, it became a minimal thing, which ended up becoming why the movie was so great. So it was the whole, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, the accidental, happy accident of having that shark mess up. Clearly, Ridley Scott, you know, kind of forced... That was something he looked at initially, and at the start of the movie, we're gonna have less Alien, and that's gonna create that tension that we get for the audiences. I was lucky enough to see Alien when they re-released it in theaters, and it was a very cool theater experience. I don't remember what year it was, but it was incredibly immersive to see that in a dark theater. Not at home, not being able to pause it, not being able to get up and go to the bathroom, whatever it was. And it was incredible. It truly was an incredible experience. And I think the Ridley Scott...
It's suffocating.
It arguably has the greatest poster tagline in the history of movies. What is it? In space, no one can hear you scream.
To me, one of the greatest jump scares in a movie is just like... And, you know, Sigourney Weaver's just exhausted, and as an audience member, you're exhausted, and she, like, leans back, and you think it's the end of the movie, and all of a sudden that arm, like, what you think, oh, no, it's, like, what you think is, like, a part of the ship, but all of a sudden it starts, like, moving, mm-hmm. you realize it's not a part of the ship, it's actually the xenomorph. I thought it was just, it gets me every single time. I've seen it 1,000 times.
Do you know the audience pick?
Is it different
gladiator?
For everybody who played at home using hashtag Ridley Blend, what'd you guys guess?
Gladiator.
It's Gladiator.
Can you explain to me why you hate Gladiator?
Yeah, we need to talk to our audience here for a second.
Because I love Gladiator.
This gentleman, Sean O'Connell, hates Forrest Gump and Gladiator, which it makes me question the man that I know as Sean O'Connell, because those are two phenomenal films.
Ash, do you like Forrest Gump?
I love Forrest Gump.
Sean, you're out. Ash, you're in.
Of course Ash does, because it's a great movie.
I watch it all the time, and I remember my best friend never saw it, and I made her sit down and watch it, and then I look over, and she's just bawling her eyes out. We went out for... Forrest Gump is the best.
Do you like Gladiator?
Sean
I love it. Yeah, Gladiator's great.
All right, I'm off the podcast. You guys have fun. Good luck.
I knew I would replace someone. I just didn't know who.
Sean, I want you to take the floor here. Yes. And I want you to walk us all through why you, quote, hate, unquote, Gladiator. That's what you said. That is what you said.
No. This is where we differ from Forrest Gump. Because I actually do hate Forrest Gump. I think that's a really bad movie. I just don't like Gladiator. I just don't like Gladiator.
Anything that happened in history, he was there.
That's lame. It's so lame.
It's You're lame.
So lame. It's really pathetic.
So upset.
Gladiator,
I just find to be boring. I think Gladiator is a boring movie. Part of it is taste. We were just mentioning taste. I'm not a big fantasy guy. I'm not a big sword and sandals guy. So that genre doesn't really do much for me.
Swords and sandals.
I think it's totally overdone. Like, I don't like Troy. When Troy came out, I didn't really care for Exodus.
Troy's fine. I mean, I don't love Troy either, but Gladiator's on a different level.
I also love Troy. I don't even care.
So I think if you like that kind of movie, then it might work for you. But I just think Gladiator is kind of...
Didn't Gladiator kind of launched that, like...
Yeah, I feel like all these movies that came about, they happened because of Gladiator.
But put sandals and swords aside, Sean. Yeah. It's a great...
Put both sandals and swords.
Put the sandals.
Put your sword down.
Yeah.
Also your sandals.
But when it all comes down to it, it's an incredible story. And
one of Hans Zimmer's best scores.
That score is so great on its own. Like I always say that the genius of a score is when it works outside of the movie as equally well as it does inside the film. Mm-hmm. And I can say that about Interstellar and Dunkirk, whatever. But when you talk about the score for Gladiator, it's a character in its own, and it's the emotional weight of that storyline. And Joaquin Phoenix, my God, that was my first real experience with him.
Oh, I forgot he was in that.
I'll never get that image out of my head. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. I forgot that he's in that. Yeah, that's one of those movies that just when it came out, I saw it the one time, and I had no real interest in seeing it again.
So you've only seen it once.
I only seen it once.
Would you give it a rewatch for the podcast?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. Maybe. when I go back and look at the movies that it beat, I think because I loved Almost Famous so much that year.
Yeah, and Almost Famous. Yeah,
I love Traffic.
You can't hold that.
So I was angry at Gladiator. Yes, it is the movie's fault. Because then I was mad at Gladiator because it won in when a better movie should have.
But what about
part of why I hate Forrest Gump? So I hate Forrest Gump for that reason.
Remember Pulp Fiction?
For other reasons.
It was Pulp Fiction versus Forrest Gump versus Shawshank Redemption.
Shawshank and Quiz Show. Quiz Show is a better movie too.
Seriously, could you imagine being a voter that year? I mean, like. First of all, the easy choice is clearly Pulp Fiction. That's the obvious choice. But
now,
those three aside, I mean, those are three masterful films. I understand why Forrest Gump won. It's the safer of the. It's the safer.
But not just
movies,
that. You have to put yourself back, like, and I was 6 when it came out. But like, based on people who've talked, because I've talked to people about this, like, Forrest Gump swept the freaking nation. Like, everyone was talking about. Like, yeah, we look back now and we're like, oh, how did you not give it to Pulp Fiction? But wasn't Pulp Fiction more of like a, like, it did well in Cannes and it was kind of like a slow burn rollout? Like everyone went and saw Forrest Gump the same way everyone went and saw Titanic. Like, it was, everyone was quoting it. It became, like, bigger than the movie itself.
Don't remind me. I know.
You can't hold that against the movie. That's not the movie's fault. It is what it is.
I love Titanic, by the way.
I also love Titanic.
By the way, I'm actually, funny enough, I'm going to the last Blockbuster on Monday on my way back from L.A., and it's in Bend, Oregon. And the reason I bring that up is because, do you guys remember Blockbuster had a special edition Titanic VHS that when they released it, it was like, it was the two, it was, you know, it was the VHS and, yeah, with the cover and the two VHSs inside. And then it was like a special Blockbuster card that came with it. I don't know why that just popped in my mind, but I had to find that. So I think my parents might have it at home, cool. But God, I
also, I want Gabe to show a picture of his Ready Player One VHS.
Oh, it's so awesome. Cool. Oh, yeah. I'm so jealous.
It's like a collector's edition one that he has.
I'm so jealous.
Got for it. So,
wait, so is it an actual VHS? It's not like a case for the Blu-ray. It's an actual VHS.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ash, can you do us a favor and watch Ready Player One and then tweet about it? Because I really want to get your thoughts on it. I know that it's on demand now. It's also on Blu-ray and stuff like that. But I want to get your thoughts on it because we all love the movie there. But I kind of wish...
I'll be crushed if Ash doesn't like it. Because there's a few people on the internet whose opinion I respect.
I do feel like we have different tastes, but I will watch it for you guys.
I'm
not really getting the difference.
Maybe you don't watch it.
Well, I just feel like you guys, I don't know. Like, you guys, like, love Mission Impossible, clearly. And it's just, like, not my kind of movie. I don't know.
That's fine. Like, I mean, listen, I
why
think
do you hate fun, Ash?
It's not, I don't know. I just don't think I like a lot of action in my face.
You know what's so funny that you mentioned that? Because I went and saw it a second time. I brought my fiance in. And when it was over, I was like, so, like, what'd you think? And she was like, it was good. Like, and I was like, no. But like,
like real high-pitched.
And he, like, you know, he went against oncoming traffic, and he drove it. And she's like, yeah, like, that's nice.
I didn't love Fallout. I didn't love Fallout. And we'll get to the review. I'll have my review coming up next week. But Ghost Protocol and Rogue Nation, I think, are much better films. And I know Jake says that this one's the best. And we'll get into that, all the details in that next week. But before we go, I know that Gabe wants us to go, but because we have Ash on, real quick, we've gotten to a lot of discussions on this show, and I don't mean to, I'm not trying to take over or derail anything here, but Ash has to speak on this real quick because Sean had a second coming on The Last Jedi, and I don't know, but Ash, what was your definitive thoughts on that movie? I know, because you're probably one of the biggest Star Wars fans I know next to Jake.
Yeah.
We've discussed this movie a lot on our show. I know we've all had differing opinions on it. Sean did not like it at first, now he loves it. I still don't love it. Jake doesn't love it. Did you love that movie?
I did. The first time I saw it, I was really unsure. And then, like, the more I watched it, the more I loved it. I don't love everything about it. Like, I thought the Canto Bight thing was a little bit of a drop. And, like, I don't love everything that Luke did, obviously. But I accept it as fact. And I thought it was just, like, a really, like, well done, awesome movie. Like that throne room scene, that fight between with Kylo and Rey was like one of the best things I've ever seen in a Star Wars film, or if not the best fight scene in a Star Wars film. I thought it was so amazing. But I do think, I think The Last Jedi is the best, the better of between The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. But I think The Force Awakens has more rewatchability. Like I'll watch that movie all the time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of how I feel about Empire and A New Hope. Like I will A New Hope is my favorite, but I think Empire's the best.
That's interesting. I just find it, and I've told the guys this in the show a million times. I get the discussion of Luke throwing the saber over his shoulder. I just feel like that's exactly what SNL would have done with that moment. Like that's what the Saturday Night Live version of that scene would have been for me. I just felt that I felt that the movie was, it was so, in my opinion, aware of our expectations that it went against it, in my opinion. I don't know if this was, I doubt this was Ryan's intentions because I love Ryan as a filmmaker. I think Brick is amazing and Looper. It just felt like the movie was aware that we were sitting in a theater waiting for what was going to happen. And for JJ to end Force Awakens with that epic moment of Rey handing the saber to Luke. And then for me, for Ryan to turn it into a joke.
I don't think that moment was intended to be a joke. Like, I think it happened and everyone starts laughing in the theater. But I think, like, to Ryan, that was like, what would somebody who's rejected the Jedi Order do? He would throw it. He doesn't want to see that thing.
But I'd argue, then is that a failure as a filmmaker? Because if he didn't intend for it to be a joke and everyone laughed at it. Because, like, I feel like there's just for me, like, because I get your point. Because, like, to me, it'd be much more dramatic, almost like if it fell to his side, then he dropped it in the ground, or he, like, you know, if he chunked it. But the fact that he just, like, to me, like, the toss over the back to me is a very comical
thing. No, I agree. And I do think, like, some of the, I love the movie, I love Ryan, but I do think some of the humor was a little bit, like, tonally off from the rest of the Star Wars movies. Yeah. Like, the rest of the Star Wars.
Like, the mom joke was a little, like do you tell your mom jokes in A Galaxy Far, Far Away?
Yeah, there was stuff like that. How do we know they don't? Kind of like, Well,
because we have no proof that they do them to this point.
All right, Gabe is telling me we have to wrap, Kevin.
Listen, Gabe, we wrap this show when we want to wrap this show. I'm two-time Harry Award winner Jake Hamilton.
I do bring this up only because we have Ash on, and she's one of the biggest Star Wars fans I've ever met, and I just wanted that to be talked about. But this is my last question. 100%. This is a yes or no question. Ash, at the end of Last Jedi, do you genuinely feel that we need another Star Wars movie? And what I say by that, here's what I mean by that. At the end of Force Awakens, I couldn't wait until the next film to find out what was going to happen with the continuation of that story. Yeah. At the end of Jedi, in my mind, I think Jake agrees with me, I have no excitement and or wonder as to what will possibly happen.
I wouldn't say I don't have wonder. Like, I'm not as jacked about it as I was after Force Awakens, but like, I gotta know what happened. Like, knowing that there's more story to tell.
But what's the question? What did that movie end with besides that kid?
I think I'm even more intrigued because of that. Like, I feel like The Last Jedi, we had so many expectations, so many things that we were like, this is the answers that we're gonna get. Here's like 9 questions we have after watching The Force Awakens. The fact that we don't have any, it's like, I'm more intrigued by the fact that I'm going to go into a movie and not know what's going to happen.
But JJ's got to be a little upset about, like, essentially Ryan kind of throwing everything away that he created. In my mind. It has to be.
I don't know, because he was part of it. Like,
was he, though? Like, I heard that Rian Johnson didn't even, like, I don't think there was a lot of interaction between those two. Was there? Am I wrong?
I mean, I don't know for sure. I can only tell you, like, what I've asked in interviews, and I was like, so you know what happens in Last Jedi, and JJ being like, oh my god, I can't wait for you guys to see it. I mean, he could have just been like,
yeah,
all right,
we'll BSing.
I feel like when you're working for Disney, there's a little bit of like playing the Disney game, which is just sort of you go along with the machine whether you agree with it or not.
Yeah.
And Ash, you didn't love Solo, right?
I did not love Solo. I wanted to like it. You know what? I've seen every Star Wars movie that's come out since I've been alive in theaters at least like 6 times. I only saw Solo once, which is crazy.
Wow.
Because I just didn't love it. But I will say there's so many like deep cuts and Easter eggs in Solo that I really want to sit down and kind of dissect it at home. So maybe when I watch it again, I'll have a totally different opinion.
I think Solo is a movie that's going to play well with audiences over the coming years.
Play a drinking game this week and everybody take a sip every time I said okay in the last 10 minutes to try to get us back on track.
This is like when I talk to my mom on the phone and I'm like, okay, mom, I'm gonna, and she's like, and I forgot to tell you what grandma's doing.
No, that's exactly what this podcast is described as. Yeah, our podcast is described as when you're talking to your mom at home and trying to get her off the phone.
We could just not have Ash on and not talk
forwards. I agree 100%. Yes, 100%.
And Ash, you have to agree with me on this. The Han Solo naming scene is one of the worst scenes in the history of movies.
Dude, you're one of the worst scenes in the history. Oh my
Thank
god!
You. Thank it. You. Oh, Hate you're by it. Yourself.
Sean, can't you wrap
you're
this
solo?
Show up?
Oh my
next
god!
Next week's assignment. I'm trying to think of what next week's blend game is, and I was thinking a lot about Mission Impossible, and I'm thinking a lot about famous villains from that franchise, and I'm thinking about an actor who had his birthday on July 23rd. So next week, we are going to play hashtag Hoffman Blend, and we will debate the best films by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Along Came Polly.
Oh, that's lovely.
Along Came
Polly. Okay, no. Best film or best performance?
Performance.
Let it rain. Yeah.
Make it rain.
Performance.
I love Along Came Polly so much. It's one of my favorite movies ever.
I can't play basketball without doing that. Like, every time.
When Ben Stiller takes that guy's stomach to his face that's all sweaty, it's one of my favorite shots I've ever...
I actually really like that movie.
All right, so...
Agreed.
Play along, hashtag Hoffman Blend.
Ooh,
Ash,
this
you can,
is a good one.
You can tweet us your choice and we'll read it next week. And we gotta wrap. We are way over. Ash Crossan, thank you so much for joining us.
I just have a few more points I need
podcast.
To make.
Yeah, just a few more things about Star Wars. And we will talk to you guys. I'm gonna go past all the social points. We're on at Real Blend and find us there. And we're way over. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Dunkirk.
Thank you.